having to do it. You know?
I think he would both find that amusing.
I want to do that.
The tough thing that we have to do is, like, we have to ask you three quick questions instead of 45 minutes.
Right.
Yes, you're asking
individual
questions.
Doing individual things like this instead of...
Yes, yes. I hope so.
Go ahead.
Okay. You are obviously a sex symbol. I don't know. I didn't know that. But the people at my table, I don't look at you when you use it. I say, well, he's not so hot. And I'll say,
in this case, we can be very happy now. Thank you.
And you're a creative person. Now, how do they collide?
If a person were a sex symbol and a creative person, I don't know why. Not that I am.
I see.
You said that. I don't know why they would particularly collide.
Would they?
I don't know.
They've collided for Redford. Redford isn't any good anymore. You remember Daphne Racer?
Really? I think he's better than he was.
You are wrong.
He's more glamorous.
Yeah?
But he's not as good an actor.
Was he ever a real good actor?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he played hollow parts.
Huh?
Hollow. He was willing to take the risk. He was willing to say, stand up on the screen and say to the audience, like, is that, is that this guy?
Well, I don't know. You may have put your finger on something, but I'm not... I haven't seen that yet. I don't know what...
Now, when you walk into a room,
yeah,
and when you put your arms around a girl, you know that she's goes back and for the rest of her life, she's to sing Warren Beatty with his arms around.
You're wrong. You're chauvinistic. You're really wrong. Can I tell you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
The thing that makes a man like this appealing, as compared to, I don't know who, because Hollywood's not dumb either, and I don't know who to give you as an example of a beautiful sex symbol with no mind. But nowadays, women just don't want a pretty face or a nice
guy. We were at our table last night.
But I'm saying that because he has a mind and that he speaks and he does other things besides acting, that's appealing to a woman, not just somebody that...
I wish you'd said that last night.
See,
when everybody said...
But I say he does not look a thing in person like he does on screen. It's a total different thing. Don't you agree?
Possible.
He's much more of a sex symbol on
screen. Certainly,
you
like this conversation.
You know.
Remember when we all said that he looked very different on screen than he does off screen?
I didn't say that. I listened and I said to the guy next to me, "Do you hear this?"
Yeah, I think that you have two different images completely. When you're on screen and you're in that tux, or even on the top of the hill in that white tab with the jeans, you look so huge and so tan and so
everything. Well, they're two different characters, really.
Right, and you're much different off screen, and completely different. But that's where I think the separation comes between a sex symbol and a creative person.
But the audience views him as a sex symbol.
Oh, for sure, I'm not arguing with that. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
I'm sorry. that's the way you want it. No, not necessarily, because you can get locked in to that identity, and the audience can't realize that you're may not realize that you're an intelligent person. I want to ask you quick questions.
Yeah.
Either yours or town's mind. Now, either yes or no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did Jackie represent Jackie Kennedy?
No.
Okay.
That's my style. How did you first conceive this as 1968?
That's a fascinating question. It really is. And I'll tell you something about film. I'm talking about film. And you may be pointing out something there that's important. And because neither Robert nor I intend this, and in fact have never thought of it, doesn't mean it's not there.
You know what she leaves for? She leaves for less than if you put another S by his name.
You know, it's interesting. I think part of film criticism that you shouldn't stop up evaluations like that. You should go with it. I mean, whatever it does to your unconscious, let it go. Because that's the way you can wind up showing people who make films something that's been going on in their unconscious that they don't know about. Not that you have in this specific instance, because I would never be specific and articulate about something like that. You know, But it's a very interesting idea, and I could carry your idea out much further.
Yeah.
You know. And who knows if it was there in anybody's unconscious? Who knows? You never know what's in your unconscious for sure, in its entirety. That's why I think it's a sort of a folly for any filmmaker particularly to sit down and say, let me tell you about my film. You could probably tell me about my film better than I could. Oh, I can give you all the pat answers about, well, this is about sexual and political hypocrisies, etc., which are obvious. But it takes someone coming up with something like you just said to help audiences find in the symbols of film what's really there. Nobody should try to be too smart about it. Just to be instinctive, intuitive, and say, well, I feel something there, and this is what I feel. It may sound crazy, but so on.
Who has something about
1980? Yeah, I was going to ask, this was your idea of the story, right?
Well, Robert and me.
Yeah. Well, did you think of it first from the standpoint of the comedy aspect about a hairdresser, or was the political undercurrent, the 1968 time frame, did that come in later, or was that in there from the beginning?
We wanted to do a story, I think initially, we were interested in treating the hypersexual character, the Don Juan. Someone who was not necessarily a misogynist, as Sigmund Freud would tell you, or a latent homosexual. Our feeling that that is a Victorian, simplistic, negative attack upon non-monogamic life, which Freud really had very little patience with and no respect for, and that what happened to us in the 60s, sexually, we needed to make a movie about. And that is you could call it the new permissiveness, you could call it the sexual revolution, or you could call it the breakup of the nuclear family, or whatever. But the conflicts that people of our generation, I don't know about you, but you seem younger, but well, yeah, your generation too, is to deal with these agonies of possessiveness, non-possessiveness, the economic politics of sex, the changing role of women, the new freedoms of women, and the incredible momentum that it's all taken. That's why it's particularly valuable, I think, to use 1968 rather than 1975. You see that in this few years. Well, I guess it would apply in varying degrees, but it is an interesting device, I think, to show the momentum, the swiftness of change, because I don't think that women would have that same self-concept now as they seemed to have in 68. They would be quite that plasticized, quite that painted up, quite that objectified by their economic necessities.
But the film's attitude has a lot of cheap laughs at the cost of homosexuals and sex. When she says, I want to suck his cock.
Yeah.
That seems to me like, you know, a big knee slapper.
Yeah.
But doesn't the film exhibit a kind of an attitude that isn't quite enlightened about sex?
On the part of the people?
On the
part of us?
Yes.
On the part of the filmmaker?
Yeah.
No, I think that it shows a group of people who are not enlightened about sex and leading hypocritical lives sexually. Unenlightened lives, lives of agony pulled back and forth where lying is constantly necessary. But I certainly don't consider myself, I don't consider myself unenlightened on the subject or unaware of the changes that are producing these agonies. Because everybody in the film is foolish doesn't mean, I think, necessarily that the filmmakers are foolish, although it could mean that.
But what I'm saying is, in affecting the audience, as you do, don't sometimes you go with the effect instead of enlightenment or sagacity or sensitivity? Don't you sometimes say, oh, this is going to work on the audience out there?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's necessary at that point, just in your narrative line, to have the character of Jack D do something completely outrageous for a very simple reason. They have to leave the party, and they have to think that they're not going to be followed to the next party by the other people. So in order for her to be kicked out of that party, she's got to do something so outrageous that she'll be kicked out. Well, that's an outrageous thing to do. And actually, it happened.
How about homosexuality, though? I thought many of those jokes were in the Carson show, you know, instead of the movie.
I think that the homosexual jokes, they might be a little cheaper. There might be some cheap gags about that, but that is because that the homosexuality is basic, or the potential homosexuality is viewed basically from the point of view of the male macho Lester, where he assumes that a character is not a contender for his macho if he's a hairdresser because he's a homosexual. In other words, a complete misconception on his part and an archaic assumption that if one is homosexual, that precludes them from heterosexual behavior at all, which I don't think you'll find among young people today. They're not that interested in whether someone's homosexual or heterosexual because they assume people go both ways. But not Lester. He thinks, well, he's a hairdresser. He's a fairy, as he says. And I'm just sorry he's a fairy because I was thinking of investing with him. And so that those laughs are actually from the point of view of Lester and from a point of view that was more prevalent in 1968. And from the point of view of the socioeconomic establishment, which did have cheap gags against the gay community. Homosexuality was a joke more than it is now.
But doesn't the audience laugh and not be sensitive to a person? Don't they laugh because a person is a type?
I don't really think that. I think some things are funny because we never know why we laugh specifically, but it has to do with certain hostilities that we feel inside and that we're too polite to express angrily, so that we laugh. To me, a joke, laughter, or comedy, or humor is hostility disguised by wit, which then produces a release of tension. And the biggest laugh in the picture is, is it a big laugh? Because throughout the picture, the audience has seen hypocritical, lying behavior, hypocrisy, finally to the point where Lester is saying there are these 40 blind children and they're tripping over the mattresses and they're saying, Jesus, we can't take, they're kind of, and then finally somebody is straight and vicious and hostile because what she's doing is she's putting down the guy who says, I think I can get you whatever you want, and the guy who is saying, economic politics, the sexual politics are this, is that if you fuck me, I'm a bank vice president, I can do whatever you want. She says, whatever I want? And he says, yeah. And she says, well, I'd like to suck his, which, it's the hostility that builds up to that laugh, because I don't think that laugh would be that size in the first reel. I think people would say, what are they trying to be dirty? But that's a build-up to that laugh. And it's a build-up because, finally, a character does something with an amount of candor. She says, fuck you, to the guy. And it's just about the time when you're ready to say fuck you to everybody in this movie because they're so shallow and so cold and superficial about their...
I have one more question. The best scene for me is the most human scene in the film. I think it's the most human film. How did it come about? Who wrote it? When you and Lester sat down and faced each other with his thugs outside?
That scene, I ordinarily wouldn't get into this kind of about who wrote and so on, yeah, because I don't believe in it. But it happens to be that that scene was written entirely by Robert Towne.
It was.
And you're right, it is a beautifully written scene. Beautifully written scene. It's a very good, sad scene. Sad scene.
Well, it says what the picture represents.
It sure does. It's a very good scene. And it's because of scenes like that that it makes me a little edgy when Pauline Kael or somebody will say, well, this is the greatest farce that American filmmakers have ever come up with, because it's not I hate to get pigeonholed into farce or comedy. It's a funny movie, but by the time you get into long dialogue scenes like this at the end, I'd hate to be living up to the category of farce there, because
it's being sold that way, though. I think the title, the subject, and the quote from the ads seem to connote a very a Peter Sellers farce. I mean,
what I've tried to do in the quote ads is to bring down that Pauline Kael quote. See, they get so excited. They say that the most sophisticated farce ever made by American filmmakers, and they say, well, what are we kidding around? But what I'm trying to do is to, in the advertisements, because they're running, because the reviews have been great for the picture all around the country, and what I'm trying to do is to not give too much prominence to any of them. Just say this and this. If you want to take the time to read what this movie's about, you can. Otherwise, you know. And then what we will do is, in those later ads, we'll take those quotes all down, and then we will put in the quotes of local people who we will hope be more. Somebody said that to me in Chicago today. Said it's a very full movie about very empty people, and I thought, boy, why couldn't Pauline Kael do that? Why couldn't she say with the best farce, you know?
Yes. I'm going to have to end this in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Have you received enough information? Obviously, you would like to talk to Warren for 2 or 3 hours, but...
I wouldn't bet on that.
I find it very, very fascinating. Hmm. Do you have enough material, or would you like to ask a couple more questions?
Well, we're naturally given that option to go ask a more questions, but we're not going to be obnoxious about it, if you want.
Yeah, let's go. There's only one way to handle a situation like that, is don't ask to go. Let's talk a couple more questions and say, come on, you have to go. Otherwise,
don't ask me that question.
I'm being polite.
But it produces an ambivalence on the part. You say, well, should I
really? You don't know whether to be honest and say,
okay, well, now we're not
going to okay. We'll just say that.
But have you noticed that reaction among people who have come to it thinking they're going to see a rip-roaring
Very much so.
Do they tend to be disappointed, or do they tend to...
I think less so, because I think our advertising is... You weren't expecting a rip-roaring farce, were you?
No, I had read full reviews, but I have talked to people who did. They came expecting to see a slapstick picture.
Yeah, I think... Well, it's something to be careful of, and that kind of advertising is... Well, that's really why you have to go around with the film a little bit. If you've made a film, it's a little different. I did it with Bonnie and Clyde, and I do it with this, because going in, if you expect, like Bonnie and Clyde, they thought, well, that's going to be about Bonnie and Clyde. It's going to be a tough pick, you know, and then they see jokes or Keystone Cops or whatever, and they say, well, what is this bullshit? I don't believe these, you know. That was an early reaction.
But
people would come in
that DDL and... She's great. Terrific. Why do you think Redford is a better actor today?
I don't know that I would go on record as saying that. I just was sort of trying to defend him against what you were saying. I actually don't think he's a better actor.
Okay.
I mean, I frankly have not got aware of what his work is now.
Do you expect this movie to do as well as Magnified?
Yes, better.
You think better?
It started off much, much better. I mean, it's been really... And places to where I was worried, like Orange County, I mean, I wasn't worried New York or Westwood or something, but Orange County in Miami, the first week broke all their house records, the second week was bigger, and the third week has gone up in Orange County. It didn't go up in Miami the third week, but, thank you. In Orange County, it's gone up. And, you know, Orange County is the most right-wing kind of redneck.
No, the picture shows that Republicans can have sex too, right?
Do you expect the word of mouth to be good, that people to see it are going to bring other people in?
When a picture goes up,
it is word of mouth.
It's because of word of mouth, because your advertising goes down. Last week in Miami, we didn't have any advertising. We were listed. But so if you go up, which is a very rare thing, we've gone up in Westwood, we've gone up in New York, and we started with the House Record. So it means to me that it means to me something about what it means to me is that it hits on something that's on the unconscious, which is, what about all this fucking around? How are we going to deal with it? What does it mean to the family, really? Which the show in Deep Throat, The Devil, Miss Jones, people will dismiss, but if you could Julie Christie and Goldie Hawn, both of whom are kind of respected, you know, as their persona, Lee Grant, I think I am. And I think if you show that you made the picture very carefully, suddenly you have to deal with a subject in a way that you don't really have to deal with it in a porno or in a picture that's not so good. That's why I think the outrage comes from certain people, like Stanley Kaufman, who says, why don't they make a porno? I mean, the man is totally outraged by it. I mean, it stirs something sexual in him deeply. He's saying, how dare they exploit their personal relationship? How dare they do this? How dare they do this? I find the reaction coming mainly from, if it comes like that, it comes from men. It doesn't come that way from women.
Don't you think it's more of a woman's feeling?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say that. I'd say it's a film more easily understood by women, more easily embraced by women, but it's... I think it's a film that's more important to men. I don't know what the hell it is.
Why do you do so few films as far as acting? I know you've turned out some great
ones. I just don't get that interested in subjects that aren't important to me. So when I'm offered a picture to produce that's going to be a success, or, you know, possibility, I've offered The Godfather to produce.
Excuse me. You.
Okay, I'll finish just this and then I'll move on. I was offered, for instance, The Godfather, which I knew was going to be a big hit. It didn't, I mean, I don't, what do I bring to that, you know?
So you're more select, it has to appeal to you artistically
before you want to even do it. I've been in a movie a long time, and I don't have anybody else around at the moment, really, except for Marlon and Paul.
What, 15 years?
I think 15 years ago I made my first picture and it was a hit. So
it was great. It was the best movie.
So I've been what they smokingly call financeable name for that period of time. So
I've bankable. Been,
bankable, yeah. I've been able to kind of live a life that drops out, it comes back, it drops out, it comes back.
Do you think that might be the secret to it, that you don't oversaturate the market like Elliot Gould did, or somebody who makes one after another?
Maybe.
Then it's boring, you don't want to see something.
I know that. It's hard for me to get energy for a subject I'm not interested in. It's very hard for me to get it together to spend 4 months to do the sting.
In 3 years' time, will this picture shampoo be as important to you as Bonnie and Clyde?
It already is.
No, I'm talking about not now, but in 3 years' time when it's past and, you know, kind of remote and...
I think that it's... certainly as good a film. And since the picture is made about a period that I actually lived through, in a time and a place where I actually was, I think it'll be more important to me than Bonnie and Clyde, because as much as I know about Texas of that time, I wasn't there and I wasn't alive then. So it has been validated. But I was there in the 60s. I know those people. I really.
Are you going to go into politics? Do you plan to?
You mean am I going to run for office? I'm in politics, but I'm not.
But you would never run for anything?
I don't say never, but I have no plans to.
Do you feel you can do more by just doing the kind of work that you're doing with other people?
I would say, I'd have to be frank enough to say I'm too selfish to run for office.
Were you happy with the Parallax View, the way that turned out?
I wasn't unhappy but I'm not throwing my hat in the air.
Can I shoot while you're talking about you?
They used too much action in that film. Paul knocked all those guys down, or that bar scene.
I didn't produce or write or make a part.
Yeah, I knew. I'm cool with it.
I think it's an important subject.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to direct?
I usually get up to a point. I was planning to direct Bonnie and Clyde and planning to direct Shampoo. I get up to a point a few months before I start shooting and I say, as long as I'm in control of the movie, why should I try to be such a... Why not use the talents of other creative people and bring them in? It's the point where the subject kind of takes over from my ego, you know. It sort of becomes more important that it be protected.
But that's part of your ego.
Maybe. Lucky for the film.
Okay, better take him then.
All right, do I take this with me?
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
I wait tables.
The promoter, I am.
You did just do one thing.